All right, are you there? Got just about 10 seconds left here, Greg.
Okay, what's that?
Got about 10 seconds.
Okay, Steve. Whenever you're ready.
All right.
I'm going to start out with something about the missing airplane.
All right, and welcome, everyone. It's Wednesday night, technically Thursday morning in the Eastern. It's past midnight Wednesday, so this is Cancel the Cabal on We Roar Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. I have my good friend tonight. He does a lot of nights. He's a great talker, military whistleblower, WMDs in Iraq, the Honorable Dr. Greg Ford. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Thank you, as always, Steve. It's always great to have your show, and you know, and I know I've made a big time when you start introducing me to the show as the Stephen Greg Show. So, do you think our folks, our listeners out in the UK and Ireland and Scotland are listening tonight?
They will be in a minute here. I can grab that. I can grab that stream and put it on also.
Oh, certainly. They always seem to, you know, come on board with some great questions.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I always love to have them listening because they enjoy questions and enjoy hearing me talk. And I love anybody that loves to hear me talk.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, you're on in Scotland's Free and People's Internet Radio in Ireland. So you're on the air there now too.
Okay. Excellent. Now. Hopefully everybody in Scotland is going to be for a big vote for freedom in, September 16th of this year?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that vote, too. So I mean, after 300 years, what can you say about voting for freedom or not voting for it? But anyway, no, hey, I just wanted to talk about this, a couple of things tonight, and if everybody, doesn't fall asleep with it. But a couple of things, crossed my desk today, and I'm really truly amazed by it. You know, this. You think anybody wants to talk about the missing airplane, Steve?
Oh well, that seems to be the only thing that they want to talk about, or maybe Kim Kardashian gaining some weight.
Oh, yeah. Poor traumatized Kim.
Poor Kim.
And her designer clothes don't look nearly as good on her pre-maternity.
Pre-baby?
Right, exactly. So, as I was just telling you, Steve, she must be the only woman in history, in world history, that has ever given birth to a baby. Judging by the tabloids, when I checked out to come home tonight, to catch your show, I said 3 out of 4 tabloids had Kim Kardashian on the front. And for a woman who can barely put a noun and a verb back to back, who can barely sing, barely dance, I just assume she can. Most of us, can.
No, I don't think so, Greg. I think she's only famous for being Bruce Jenner's stepdaughter. I think it's the only reason, and that high-powered lawyer father of hers being on the OJ trial.
Right. Yeah, that's right. He didn't want to say the N-word.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, I understand. That's right. Yeah, the whole group of them. When I heard one of those $1 million an hour, phony baloney attorneys state that he didn't want to say the N-word, the real meaning of the N-word, on television, I thought, has this thing become a circus or not? There is no way that this thing is going to end in anything other than a farce. And I was correct.
Yeah. Well, Greg, I heard reports that they took OJ off of his rheumatoid arthritis drugs like a month before he was supposed to have testified or whatever, and they brought them gloves out and tried to put him on his fingers and that. And
when was that?
Well, when they, I don't, it was late in the trial when Johnny Cochran had O.J. try to put them gloves on and say, and then he come out with his little stupid saying that if they don't acquit, you must acquit or something like that. Well, you see, the thing was they took him off his drugs like a month before he was supposed to have done that, and I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I've been off my meds a few times when I've lost insurances and stuff like that, and all of my joints swell up like basketballs. You know, you can't hardly get anything on you. You can't get your gloves on. You can't get pants up over your knees because they're all swollen up. It's just
horrible.
Well,
I watched that half-hearted attempt when they had those gloves. Yeah. Everybody,
it was a half-hearted attempt. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It was a half-hearted attempt.
Yeah, I've never spoken to anybody that doesn't know that when your leather gets wet and wet from blood, it doesn't change shape and shrink, and definitely gets stiff and dry. And that's what I saw with those gloves. Okay. And of course, all the nonsense and carrying on about detectives taking, forensic sample home. Say, what were they actually trying to get this guy off? Set up a situation where some slick attorney, when that happens, some slick attorney could have screamed high heaven. When a detective takes evidence home out of the chain of evidence, the chain of custody evidence.
Yeah, but they
take it home. That's over. The case is over.
Yeah, but so. But didn't they call him a racist for doing that though?
well, I don't know about that. I mean, when they went into something, about Mark Furman, up in Idaho or something like that, they brought in all these other side issues. Basically that's how murder, a good murder attorney works. Okay, like we have out here, we have a attorney named, he's world class, world famous. There was a movie made about him called True Believer. Now, James Woods played the role, but his name's Tony Serra. And boy, if I ever knock some thick finger sod over the head and put him into arrest, I want Tony Serra protecting me in court. I really do, because this guy can generate every side issue in the whole world, all right, and get some of the most deserving homicidal cretins, off the hook, all right, whether you could go out and kill again.
Nothing but red herrings, huh?
Right, and that's what Tony Serra is famous for. He's world famous. He's famous because of that right there. A friend of mine, her husband was running around with a methamphetamine drug addict by the name of Ellie Nessler. And you can go ahead and Google that name, Ellie Nessler, because it's quite a case, all right? And Ellie Nessler was famous her son had been molested by a karate instructor. So Ellie Nessler walks in with a gun, into the courtroom, and the guy is testifying, and I've actually been to the courtroom and saw the aftermath of what had happened. Chairs flipped upside down and so forth, complete chaos in the courtroom. But she walks up to him while he's testifying and proceeds to shoot him full of holes. Okay. Now, that killed him.
Right.
And so Ellie Nessler, of course, as anybody would do, if they're really afraid of being convicted. And I'm surprised that O.J. didn't do this. She retained Tony Serra. And sure enough, kind of in front of 25 witnesses, she managed to walk, scot-free. And of course, like most of Tony Serra's clients, I say that loosely, they usually are repeat offenders, and they usually end up, back in the can, for either killing somebody else, which there was up in Mendocino County recently, there was Tony Serra shows up, and he's always entertaining. He wears a big long ponytail, and he has a great big silver tooth, and the guy is just a thorough showman. Okay, in the courtroom, but there was a Native American that killed another Native American, and they're always named Running Bear or something like that. Well, Running Bear killed somebody, and Tony Serra got him off. And about, 18 months later, Running Bear went and capped somebody else. Okay. So, needless to say, Tony Sarah didn't represent him again, which I guess he's to be commended
for. Yeah. Isn't that kind of funny how,
So much, getting back to all these attorneys, so much for Mr. Kardashian not using the N-word in the courtroom. You know, I guess that's some sort of ethnocentric sense of pride, I guess, for not doing that. But anyway, so now we have this legacy left for us because Mr. Kardashian passed away from some sort of cancer and not too long after that. And now we have the reality show, The Kardashians. Okay. And, I'm a doctor. I have 2 postgraduate degrees. Okay. I have a master's a degree and also I have 2 undergraduate degrees. And you know my history. I've been in the intelligence business, traveled the world, I've pretty much done it all, relatively speaking. But do you think that I've ever come, within even the same universe, the same cosmos as Kim Kardashian's earning capability?
No,
there's something wrong here. Okay, there's
not
something
hardly.
Wrong.
Yeah,
she is casually worth $50 million. Casually, probably more like $100 million. Okay, and then I read tonight where Justin Bieber is. He was in jail recently. Justin Bieber. I guess they call his fans believers. Okay,
believers.
Last year he made $150 million. Last year, made $150 million. And of course, one of the greatest biographies, to come out. Okay. And everybody's waiting breathlessly is the biography of Justin Bieber. Okay. What is he now? 19 or 20, something like that?
Yeah. So I'm not even sure if he can, I'm not sure if he's legal to drink now.
I don't know either. I don't know, but I know he's old enough to get tattoos. He's old enough to throw eggs at his neighbor's house. He's old enough to smoke crack cocaine. So I guess I'm missing something. I guess I really missed the train with my life. Okay. I mean, I took on the American government over a hideous policy of torturing, rendition, mayhem, murder, and of course that just, that just encouraged and just encouraged the, the U.S. government when I was strapped to a stretcher to go ahead and make a business. They've made a full business out of torture, mayhem, and murder all over the world, globally, on a subscription basis. And, I can't even get donations to fight my case against the American government. Okay. Which are spending, they're spending tens of millions of dollars to fight me. All right. But Justin Bieber sings a song and gets $150 million. Okay. I'm really seriously doing something wrong. And I'd love to have your listeners call in and tell me what I'm doing wrong. All right. I really would. So anyway, let's jump track here. Steve, if you don't mind, this plane that disappeared. All right.
Right.
Now I kind of went into it. This MH370.
Right.
I went into it. Briefly on your show last time about emergency positional indicating radio beacons, EPIRBs, and so forth that give these planes away. When I was learning how to fly as a pilot, they said, "Okay, be careful. When you come in for a landing, make sure you put down flaps, because if you drop that plane onto the runway a little too hard, like in Shannon Airport there, okay, like I say, I love Shannon Airport because it's the only place I've ever seen anybody so enthusiastic about watching planes take off, okay. I mean, they were so enthusiastic there that made me want to go watch and see these passenger planes take off. So anyway, and I'll say hello to those folks. I'll take the chance to say hello on your show here. But there's a lot of things now that basically prevent a 200-ton passenger plane with 270 people on board, from disappearing. Okay, disappearing out of the sky. And I was looking at a route that plane took. That plane went through about 5 separate overlapping, extremely monitored radar zone. Okay, some of the most heavily watched area in the world. All right. multi-phase radar systems, military radar systems, fade this place completely. You know, in digital repeating data collection. All right, nothing flies around here. You can even see, as I said last time, with multi-phase array radar systems, you can see butterflies 100 miles away in the air. Butterflies. All right. You can actually collect on butterflies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what you mentioned the last time, Greg.
Right. And as I mentioned, I think I said that a friend of mine, he wasn't Irish. Okay. But he had been drinking. Okay. And he got into his plane and, you know, of course it was about one of the stupidest things he did in his life. Okay. Was get into a plane after he'd been drinking, but he'd been drinking all his life. See. But this was the end, okay, for this man. I liked him, he was a good guy, but got into his plane, and he passed out at the stick, and he kind of like disappeared, okay, the plane disappeared, he didn't show up where he was supposed to show up, so they went back, and on digital radar, okay, multi-phase radar that the Navy has on the California coast, they were able to track exactly where his plane was when it started to descend. Every 10 feet, there was a reading on his plane as it was spiraling down into the ocean, and they knew exactly down to the square meter where that plane went in, all right? They know where that plane went into the ocean. So that's what we're looking at with this 200-ton behemoth flying around, carrying all these people, okay? And like I say, it went through, you know, its intended route was through China. Okay, tell me China doesn't monitor, you know, its entire territory very, very closely. And especially China is in a spitting contest with about five other countries for control of these areas of the South China Sea, which is exactly where this plane went. Okay. And the Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, okay, that's where the plane was flying. You know, so in other words, its path was completely bathed in tracking systems. And so there was no way, okay, just if the plane did not have any signals emitting from it, there's no way that plane could have just disappeared, period, okay? But now the story even gets even more mysterious. And now I'm convinced, as I said last time, that there's just simply not, there are people that are just not talking, all right? For political reasons or whatever, they are just simply not going to tell, you know, the families of those 200 people that, yes indeed, that where that plane went down or where that plane is now. That's all there is to it. The E-perps did not fire when they hit the water or hit the ground, whatever that plane did. E-perps did not fire. And then there was the tracking system, which I think most people aren't aware of. But this tracking system is called an ACARS system, and that's ACARS. And ACARS, all right, I was sort of aware, you know, of the ACARS system when a few years back I flew on a C-5A Galaxy, you know, the biggest plane in the world. I caught a flight over to Hawaii, and so I went up with the pilots and we were talking, and you know, wonderful technology at its finest. The throttles of the plane were, you know, on their own. The throttles of the plane were rocking back and forth. And I asked the pilots, I said, what on earth is that? I've never seen throttles move back and forth on their own. And they were moving sometimes half inch, quarter inch, an eighth of an inch, but on their own. And they said that there are sensors around the opening of each jet intake that, you know, that sense still air, and they accelerate the engine when there's still air to improve performance. All right. So the ACARS system, what that does, that transmits several times a second, a millisecond, a thousandth of a second, the performance levels of each engine on each passenger plane. All right. Well, that's exactly what this plane had, was an ACARS system transmitting several times a second the performance of each engine. So in other words, this was all being recorded, every bit of performance of that engine, what it was doing, how it was operating, the whole system was operating, was being transmitted out on ACARS. And they had also a transponding system. The transponding system basically emits a signal where that plane is at any given moment, all right? So there's a tracking system that tells exactly what's going on with the mechanics and electronics of that plane, And there's also a tracking system that says physically where that plane is in space at any given time.
Say, Greg.
All right, well, yes.
I got a comment from somebody. There's a woman named Lorraine Moray. She said the Vietnamese government reported the same day of the plane disappearing that the U.S. had shot the plane out of the sky using a new X-ray system or something like that from a Navy ship.
I haven't heard that. I haven't seen anything like that, but I'm not quite sure why they would do that. You know, there usually is a reason why somebody would kill, you know, hundreds of people like that. Unless it's George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, they have no problems killing 100 people or 1,000 people. But usually, you know, reasonable people can have a reason for that. And then, so there had to have been a reason why some sort of bathing, microwave technology, would be aimed at this plane and to bring it down like that, and to bring it down suddenly. Because even if that had happened, as I said, the tracking systems and the phased array radar would automatically engage and track that plane every millisecond, exactly what it was doing and what its attitude was and what its onboard electronics were doing. So,
Greg,
that's very possible. That's very possible.
That same listener said it was the Bush Nazis sending Russia a message.
Well, there's easier ways to send somebody a message than destroying an airliner. But she very well could be onto something there because like I say, very clearly that plane had. And this is something to think about too. There was no indication that anything was awry. The last words that were sent from the plane to the last Malaysian traffic control was "All right and good night." All right, that doesn't sound like anybody's having any problems or any trepidation on board that plane. And that plane, after that point, that plane had 6 hours of fuel, and when it disappeared, somebody physically would have had to have shut off the transponder, okay? The transponders don't shut themselves off. No, somebody physically would have had to have shut the transponder off.
Yeah.
And the ACAR system was shut off.
Hey,
right?
Hey, Greg.
Yes.
And the listener said it was also payback to the Malaysians for the trial verdicts against the Bush cabal.
Oh, well, okay. Goodness, I would have been surprised because of the totality of this issue, the totality of this plane disappearing. Very clearly, somebody had some sort of system to take this plane out. And if you remember correctly, couple of our shows back, I had mentioned, you know, the acronym MIGI, Meekening, Intrusion, Jamming, and Intercept.
Right. Exactly.
In the electronic intelligence field, all right, which I was in before I went into intelligence analysis, and then I went on to become an intelligence agent. Those are always, when you're on a plane or when you're looking at aviation, you know, because aviation is how we get around anymore. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I got in, you know, I was in the former workers' paradise. Of the Soviet Union, got on board a plane at dawn, and by the time the plane set down and the sun had gone down, I was in my home in Sacramento, all right? You know, how many time zones, how many countries did we touch down, you know, in refuel and cross? You know, I mean, several, all right? It's an incredible wonder, all right, of today's communications and jet travel, okay? So with this situation, all right, we have a tremendous amount of technology that's involved. And when I say MIGI, the best example I could think of, okay, is this, and it involved me personally. And because I can't think of a better situation, right, except for maybe flight 007, you know, the KAL flight, I was years and years ago, I was on a seaplane, Coast Guard seaplane, and we were off in the Caribbean. Flying along, and I noticed, and the navigator noticed that there was a full moon night, and the Caribbean was below us, shining, and it was a beautiful night to be flying. And I noticed that the porthole windows, you know, the moonlight was streaming through, and it started to change, like we were turning, And the navigator noticed it, and so he calls the pilot, and he asked the pilot, are you actually changing course? And the pilot said, no, I'm not changing course. I'm following, you know, they have different, you know, tracking systems and, you know, Omega systems and so forth like that. And, he said, I'm tracking on this course. And the navigator said, no, I can see the moon changing course. Okay. We're flying in a different direction. What are you doing? He said, I'm not doing anything. And the pilot said, okay, all right, I'm going to declare an emergency at this point. Because we're too close to Cuba. Okay. And that was the operative word, Cuba.
Right.
And so the pilot shut off the electronic tracking system, which, you know, and then he took it and then actually, you know, and this is where you separate the men from the boys now. He was able to fly by compass, plain old compass, and take us home and flew us home back to Florida. But the thing was, it was very clearly our electronic systems were being jammed and our plane was being directed to fly into Cuban airspace.
So what did it turn out being? Not the moon and maybe some.
No, it was the moon that actually told us that.
Okay.
We're being what's called meekening. Okay. Meekening is when your systems are being fed artificial information and making your onboard systems do something they're not supposed to do, like wander into a sensitive area.
They're trying to trick them. Trying to trick the sensors and the system.
Right. Exactly. Unless you have somebody that's awake and on board and watching, like we did, fortunately we did, you could have a situation like the KAL, Flight 007 that left North America and it flew on a long flight over to Korea, but it went up and it impinged on and it entered Soviet airspace and they shot it down. This was about, 20 years, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And they shot it down. And that was a big disaster when they shot it down. And it turns out that, yes, the plane was doing bad things. And very clearly, it had wandered into Soviet airspace. When I say bad things, I mean like as in it was possibly doing what's called sampling. When you went in electronic intelligence, you can actually set up sampling of radar systems that the plane will fly through, and that will give digital readoffs of what capabilities that the radar systems have and that the plane will fly through. So if the plane were to sample, say, Soviet airspace phased array radar like what we have, okay, it would give that digital record, okay, to an electrical intelligence analyst who could figure out exactly how to counteract that radar if need be. So that's what they figured that plane was doing, was sampling radar, okay, and it wandered off into Soviet airspace, possibly with Meekening or Imiji, you know, doing something to it, and that Soviet fighter shot it down, you know, and bagged it with a missile. So killed 270 people, all right, almost 300 people. So yes, that does happen, and I strongly suspect that it's something very comparable in this case because they are absolutely sure that plane was flying. This MH370 was flying 6 hours, after they said goodnight and the systems were shut off. They know that it was flying. There was actually human hands at the stick of that plane, flying that plane for 6 hours after all these systems were shut off. So the mystery certainly deepens, all right? And it's hard to say, but I doubt in this day and age that you could hide a plane that size or even have a plane go down, in a 10 square meter area of the ocean and not have at least 3 to 4 intersecting triangulation radar systems track it and pinpoint the exact spot where it went down. So that is my take on that, all right? And it seems to be, my take on it seems to be holding pretty true, all right? Because given the fact that the Malaysians don't want to talk about it, and the Chinese are demanding answers, and they're still not getting any kind of, they're demanding questions, and not getting any kind of answers, would certainly support that. And the fact that is I noticed now that they said, well, the only way we can figure out what really happened is to get the black box on board and analyze the black box. Oh, yeah, Right. Uh-huh. That's going to happen here. All right. They're going to find the black box, and it's going to tell them exactly what happened. Okay. I doubt that very seriously. They won't find hardly anything of that plane ever again. All right. So that's my take on it.
Hey, Greg.
Yes.
That same listener would like to know what you think of the defense contractor patent conspiracy.
Okay. Let's say that again, Steve.
There's
defense contractor what? I'm sorry?
Defense contractor patent conspiracy.
Patent conspiracy.
Yeah.
Okay. In relation, okay, can we narrow it down a little bit? When you say patent, you mean as in the patents, as in patent office, as in patent technology?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, no. What is going on? Are they referring to the patent trolls? What are called patent trolls that are buying up certain patents? And
yeah, there's another one out there too. Yeah. That there's I think it's the crikey. I just heard of this last week and told somebody else, and she didn't seem to think too much of it. So I would have to look. There was like I think it was Chinese group of people had like 4 out of 5 patents. Four guys held the patent, and the fifth was the actual corporation or something like that, was the other part of the patent holder. And of course, when most of the patent holders die, the patents all go to the remaining patent holder, which is the corporation. But I don't recall what the patents were now. It was, maybe it was Tesla technology or something like that. Seems like I heard, but not totally positive now.
Okay. Well, you know, anything to do with defense contracting and patents, you're going to see a lot of skullduggery. All right. That goes without saying. The only experience that I've had is, and again, it's personal experience. You live long enough, you get to see and do it all, it seems like. But I owned it was a patent, but it covered a group of computer security systems. And I was just basing my technology on the fact that with every computer system, there's always going to be somebody smart enough to break it. Okay. If they can identify the system, the security system, they could break it. And so I thought, okay, the only way to get around that is to put what I call guarded thought function into a computer function, all right, and into the operations of a computer. And so, in other words, when your listeners call, they're listening to me, or they're listening to you, or when you're speaking to me, or I'm speaking to you, I am not thinking the same words I'm speaking. And that's what I wanted to do with my computer system, my computer security systems, was have a guarded thought function. If I say something to you, Steve, that doesn't sound right, or maybe it's sensitive, you know, maybe it's a swear word on your show, okay, that your guarded thought function will kick in and tell me, don't say it.
Malaysia's government is asking.
I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. I was trying to trying to search up the conspiracy, and a video popped up on me by mistake. So sorry about that.
So anyway, they see guarded thought function. You know, it works. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so my system was basically, you know, teaching a computer how to think about the information it gives out. And it was fairly inexpensive, and it could be applied to virtually any computer system that had a computer chip. All right. So, and I went to slow down the function, and the biggest thing, it did not need what do they call cryptographics or cryptology, okay?
Oh, semiconductors.
It did not need crypto, okay?
It was semiconductors. That's what it was.
Right. Well, surprise. You know, I mean, I was very naive. I thought, okay, all right, if I come up with a better mousetrap, you'll beat a path to my door. Oh, boy, was I wrong. I got threatened. I got cajoled. I had everybody show up on my doorstep, every patent troll you can imagine, okay, trying to either get control of it without paying me anything, of course, that was the bottom line, or threaten me into not using it at all and implementing it at all. And of course, there was always the, you know, litigation threat. And so after a while, I just threw up my hands and said, look, you know, and I was right. You know, virtually every computer system, security system, firewall system, all these daunting names that they named the computer securities that defend our country, defend our utility systems, defend our nuclear production systems, that they've all been breached handily, okay? I mean, quite often by a 16-year-old kid, you know, with a Dell computer. You know, I mean, that doesn't take much at all. You know, if the human mind can identify and target the system to be breached, it will, all right? There's nothing that can stop it. And, you know, forget, and as I said, you know, some of the systems that, like MIT system and Department of Defense's system, they said it would take 10 massive Cray computers generating, you know, 728 for 10,000 years to crack this code. Oh, yeah, right. Well, you know, the kid with a Stingray bike, you know, on the Dell computer was cracking those crypto security codes just as handily as you pick up the newspaper. And so, surprise, it hasn't worked. But you think that my system, which I was willing to basically donate just to see some sort of secure computer security a level established, and I was given so much static over it that I just finally threw my hands up. And so if that's what this person is talking about, that scandal, yes, I do understand what it is. And yes, it's going on every day, and it is a major hindrance to our technology.
Well,
I mean, our technology has been so hindered as a result of everybody being scared to death to impinge on somebody else's patent, or the patent trolls buying up somebody else's patent and charging royalties for it, or litigation.
Well, obviously here, Greg, it's a free scale semiconductor, a U.S. technology company. And there were 20, I believe it says 20 high ranking people that were part of this program. And, four of them were co-patent holders with the corporation itself. And, oddly enough, Jacob Rothschild is now the sole owner of this semiconductor patent. And he's the sole owner of this, well, he's the owner of the technology company that holds this patent.
Oh, okay. You would have to mean, what did you say, Rothschild?
Rothschild, yeah. Red Shield.
Okay. Oh, okay. Gosh. You would have to be named, you know, a name like that, right? Or
right.
DuPont or Rockefeller or something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm sure, you know, there's plenty of money at hand, money to be made. And you know, if I wouldn't miss my bet, I'd say we better check the cause of death of the four other patent holders, because you'd probably find that.
Well, they were on the plane.
They were on one plane?
They were on the plane, yes.
Oh.
They were on the Malaysian plane, along with
them. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes. Well, that's enough of a reason to bag the plane right there.
Along with 16 other people that, are associated with them.
Oh my goodness. Oh, okay. No, I'm sorry. My political intelligence and analysis is a little rusty, okay, at this time of night. So, I'm sorry. I didn't understand it. Oh, okay.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
A little illumination, all right, you know, taking place here. Okay. Well, yes, that sounds surprisingly like another plane that went down. Called the Lockerbie bombing.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. The Pan Am plane that went down over Lockerbie, Scotland.
Right.
A few years back that finished off Pan Am as an airline, by the way. Now that nobody seems to want to talk about it was that they recovered every single piece of luggage. You know, and by the way, the bomb went off prematurely. It was supposed to have gone off over the ocean, but it went off over Scotland. And of course, everything rained down on the little tiny village of Lockerbie. And, you know, I'm sure maybe there's even somebody listening from Lockerbie. So if I say something wrong or they can straighten me out. But the way I understand it is that they recovered every single piece of luggage, which were several hundred pieces of luggage in the plane, except for two pieces of luggage. All right. And it turns out that the two pieces of luggage they belonged to two intelligence agents who were on board the plane and had extreme intelligence sensitivity in terms of Middle East issues and terrorism issues that were going on at the time, and specifically Gaddafi, okay, Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And so, funny thing, guess which two pieces of luggage were never recovered, okay, from the wreckage.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's kind of right, like, so that's kind of
very,
like,
very comparable. Okay. All right. Yeah. Now I understand a little bit. Okay.
You know, that's very, very, very similar to, all eight black boxes on all four planes that, well, three crashed in the building, supposedly. And then the other crashed into a field in Pennsylvania. None of them black boxes were found, you know.
Well, okay, something I know a little bit about. Nice.
Yeah.
Exactly. Of course, the one that crashed into the field in Pennsylvania, thanks to Dick Cheney, all right, you know, remember the air-to-air missile that was fired that, you know, our government swore up and down, no way, no how, it could
right.
happen.
Yes.
And of course, the starboard engine was cut by each shear. They found parts of it miles and miles away. Well, that's what that was from. Okay. And of course, you know, what was the government's take on it? No, it couldn't have happened. We would not do such a thing. All right. And by the way, the electronic intelligence indicated that, yes, indeed, on that plane, a brief time right before that plane was bagged and shot down, it was shot down. It did not crash. It was shot down. That the people on board, yes, indeed, had gained control of that plane. They stated they had gained control of that plane. And within seconds after they stated that they had gained control of that plane, that plane was blown out of the sky and sent crashing into that little shallow valley that it hit. So that's, you know, that's another case. That's another issue. All right. Oh my goodness. Is that NSA weighing in?
I don't know. I think it's just some little noise, maybe. I'm not sure.
I
do have my Facebook page open.
Oh, okay. Or is that another viral attack?
No.
These things seem to come when we talk about community sensitive issues.
Yes, they do, but I haven't had one of them yet tonight, so.
Yeah, I was on another show last night and talking about, you know, some issues that are comparable. And twice I had two notifications from the NSA. So I thought it would be only appropriate to bring up the fact much to the benevolence of our politicians and, you know, in Washington, who spend most of their time just, you know, kissing the butts of all the lobbyists that, you know, that fritter around dumping money on these jokers. The House Intelligence Committee is now beginning to say, well, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to give NSA the right to vacuum up millions and millions of U.S. citizens' phone calls, okay, as in cell phone calls. All right, and it has now become a, you know, as I think I mentioned on your show, it has now become a campaign issue. Several of the candidates are talking about, you know, making not only my story with the agency and all the intelligence agencies torturing, you know, for a fee, of course. Always remember for a fee. All right,
probably Republican candidates, right, Greg?
Of course, right, yeah. Right, yeah. Nobody gets more sanctimonious than a Republican, all right? and of course now, Senator Feinstein, who, you know, your listeners know that I notified as soon as my little 9.5 size feet touched ground, you know, in North America after being in the Middle East, and I notified in writing to her personally, that the Abu Ghraib scandal was about to break and involve the United States of America in the greatest war crime scandal in American history. Okay, now, and of course, she swore up and down she didn't know. Nobody had informed her, nor Nancy Pelosi. Okay, and Nancy Pelosi, who, by the way, these are all named as material witnesses in my court case. Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, and Dianne Feinstein. All right, well, they as of yesterday, there is a three-way menage a trois going on, okay, between the Senate probe of the CIA's use of torture, murder, rendition, and assassination program, on which, of course, they say, oh, yeah, no, it's been put to bed a long time ago. No, it's not. It's bigger than ever, and better than ever, and making more money than ever, okay? And the CIA and the White House. And because there was so much, you know, thanks to a few people out there that have stood up and done the right thing, I think, me being the main person, as far as I can tell, that it is now, has become a nuclear detonation. That was described to me yesterday, by the way, Steve. It was a nuclear detonation. And it looks like it's going to head into a comparable path of the Watergate scandal, all right, before it's all said and done. Okay, well, me and my documents are right at the center of it. So I just wanted your listeners to know that, yeah, this is about the fourth chapter in about 12 chapters of my court case, fighting and trying to bring the United States, to justice for the disaster called Iraq and Afghanistan. All right. So, yes, that happened yesterday. I was notified almost immediately. As soon as I woke up, I was notified of that. And now I see where these government agencies don't do anything out of benevolence, but the NSA is backing off now on monitoring American citizens' phones. Vacuuming, I think, is the best term, okay, but indiscriminate collection is the better term, and of millions of phone users, okay, anywhere in the world, and anywhere in the United States, they're just backing up everything that they have, and now they say that they're only going to keep the information for 18 months. Okay, first of all, what a bunch of nonsense. Secondly, whenever you give something away, in government circles, you never get it back. You can't take it back. All right. There's supposed to be something called checks and balances. Good luck on that one. Checks and balances, right? My grandmother even knew better than to believe in that one. All right. So that is the newest deal about NSA right now, is that they've been summarily punished with, quote, strongly worded verbal admonishments on their collection.
Do you believe it, though, Greg?
Of U.S. citizens, okay.
Do you believe it, though, Greg?
Believe what?
Believe they've been sternly punished or sternly something.
Oh, I believe that they received a strongly worded verbal admonishment. Okay, I believe that, yeah, okay. Right, and I'm sure they were all a flutter when they got that, chastised. Okay,
I bet that was kind of like that. I bet that was kind of like that South American bank that got caught laundering $378 billion, and they got slapped on the wrist with a fine of $100 million.
Exactly.
That's kind of like robbing a bank of $10 million and flipping the cops a quarter on their way out.
I'm sort of beginning. I've asked your listeners to help me, please. I need help in comprehending what is going on here. I see war crimes. I have to treat the victims medically in Iraq. And of course, it's by law, okay, when you're in the intelligence business and you witness, terrible things like somebody being tortured to death or set on fire or garroted or dismembered or eviscerated or strapped to a hood of a car and driven around the community, strapped naked to a hood of a car, it's 135 degrees, and they're strapped to a hood of a Humvee, okay, and you're not supposed to say anything, say, okay, but if you see it, you're supposed to report it. Well, okay, me being the doctor, okay, yes, I did report that, terrible, horrible, horrific torture was being done, and I knew about it because I gave full, complete documentation, medical documentation of each case, and like I say, the officer corps, everybody seems to think that officers are above reproach, okay? That is a lethal, lethal mistake, people.
Right.
All right? And if you don't think so, look at the Battle of the Somme in World War I, okay?
Yeah.
Look at Pearl Harbor, all right? Officers, okay, involved, all right? Yeah.
Say, Greg.
And, yes.
You wanted me to tell you when we got to the hour here. We're at the hour, and then you said you wanted to decide on whether going some more or not.
Oh, okay. Well, that's before you got me wound up on this.
You want to continue then?
Sure. If your listeners, are rolling their eyes and say, oh man, not this guy again.
Okay.
Not this guy. All right. If none of them are writing in saying, hey, just you beat feet, get off the air, let somebody else have a shot, then I'll stay for another hour if you want me to.
Sure. That's fine, Greg.
Okay. Okay. Super. So, all right. So, are you gonna play AC/DC or something like that for the for your station identification?
I didn't even need a break tonight. So, go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. I kind of liked it when you played. Guns N' Roses, right?
Yeah. Guns N' Roses. Yeah.
Yeah. As I think I told your listeners that the psychological warfare group was in town in Samarra. I think this is in Iraq. And the sun was going down, and they were trying to figure out what they should play on their loudspeakers to assuage and change, you know, what's the ethnocentric concerns, you know, of the Arabic population in the city of Samarra, Iraq. And so I have to give it to them. Okay, those little rascals. Okay, they came up with the booming version of Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. Okay. There is nothing like hearing Axl Rose echoing off the minarets and mosques of the Middle East. Okay. So that's why, and you played it on one of your shows, and it really was elating. Okay.
Yes, I did. Yep.
Well, it was downright patriotic, to be quite honest with you. All right. So anyway, so that is indeed what is happening. Okay, you know, as of today is that Washington changes mind about phone data. Okay, of course we have some bloated pompous ass. Excuse me, is ass one of those bad words I'm not supposed to say?
No, okay. You're all right.
Okay, straighten me out on this. Okay, help me out here, Steve. All right, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. Oh, great. All right, this guy, you know, he's got the dyed hair, you know, and the bloated alcoholic-looking face, and a typical politician look, right? So yeah, and he's acting like it's some sort of what's the word, epiphany that he's giving to the American people that somehow Ed Snowden said, and Ed Snowden had to lead the country over, that NSA was eavesdropping on American citizens, the people, very same people that were paying hard-earned tax money to support this bad behavior by these out-of-control rogue agencies like the NSA and like the CIA. Okay. And, oh, by the way, I don't know, did you by chance get one of my, you know, I had an article done on me, and it was in conjunction with this big blow up in Washington over the Senate probe. Did you get one of my articles, Steve? I will make sure if you didn't, I will make sure that you got it because several thousand.
I haven't seen
several
it yet.
Thousand media outlets received my article. So
I haven't seen it yet. No.
Let me have your email, and I'll make sure that my biographer gets you a copy.
Well, okay, I can do that, but I'll pass it in your Facebook chat. Is that okay?
Oh, great, great. Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
So I could just say, you know, that look for my article. It's about five paragraphs. You know, I don't need to go on like some bloated politician about how wonderful I am, and go on about something I know nothing about. You know, my biographer wrote about the weapons of mass destruction. Okay, the thermonuclear devices that I discovered in Iraq. All right, and the torture issue that is now the heart of the Senate probe. Which is headed up by, of course, who else? Dianne Feinstein, right? Dianne Feinstein. Well, several thousand media outlets received my story in the last 24 hours, and so it's out there. And it was also a copy was also sent to the Ninth Circuit Court. Okay, since that's where I have my case filed. So I will make sure, you know, that you get a copy. And I wanted your listeners that, if they wanted a copy, to get a copy. Also, they could get a copy. Okay, because my biographer can send it to virtually any media outlet. And let's face it, if it would annoy, if anything that would annoy the U.S. Attorney's Office, I'm all in favor of doing. All right, so anyway, yeah, I will make sure you get a copy of that. That did come out, so.
Okay, thanks.
Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, okay, so, yeah. So the NSA, right, like I say, is just trying to figure out how they can, the American people and not have to account for anything and not provide any kind of proof that they're actually obeying the law. Okay. All right. That, I know that annoys government types. But that's, again, as I have found out, that's why they have the U.S. Attorney's Office, to let the American government break the law.
But when was the last time? But when was the last time they were accountable, though, Greg?
They were who? U.S. Attorney's Office or the government?
Government.
Oh, let me see. I'd like to say they were sort of accountable during Watergate, all right? That sort of was the case.
Yeah, but do you think...
Well, politicians are flexible. They're elastic, okay? They're malleable, all right? I mean, look at in Europe, World War One and World War Two. You know, those politicians, they turned right around and got the world into two world wars. And you know, what they did was they started the wars, the politicians did, and told the people, guess what? You know, we got you into this war. Now you're going to get yourselves out. And as soon as the people did get themselves out, guess who was back in charge again? All right. The same politicians. Kind of nothing changed. Okay. So it's hard to say the last time, you know, any government was, you know, subservient to, you know, to the actual people that pay their salaries and put them in power. Yeah, it's hard to tell when they were, actually felt like they were, like
say,
they
Greg,
were actually working for the citizens.
Yeah. Right. Say, Greg, you know, yeah. Greg, I can make the argument that Tricky Dicky was probably told, you know, you're going to be a single termer. You kind of went off the reservation there, so we're going to teach you a lesson. You're going to resign. Otherwise, we're going to, you know, we're going to bring out what, you and Poppy Bush did back in the 50s and 60s.
You could say when Poppy Bush, okay, you know what I think of the Bush crime family, all right? Proud tradition of hypocrisy.
Yes, yes.
And I mentioned on your last show, by the way, that the weapons of mass destruction that I found,
right,
okay, in Iraq, all right, the VX canisters, all your listeners have heard about this ad nauseum, okay? They didn't hear until recently about the thermonuclear detonators because I didn't know exactly what I was dealing with, all right? The thermonuclear detonators are out there, and like I say, either they are in the hands of Vladimir Putin, which would explain our impotent rage at the Crimean situation. All right, and I told your listeners, I'm still standing by my guns. We are not going to do, you know, America is not going to do anything, all right, to Vladimir Putin, because he has his hands on our nuclear detonators and our VX gas canisters, both of which were moved up to Syria. There's no doubt in my mind that was the situation. That is the situation. Or those nuclear detonators are, you know, a few of them, I counted 15, okay, at the Alakaka facility, ordnance facility. I counted 15. There might be more. You know, and like I say, I gave some sensitive information to your people, okay, your listeners, okay, that nobody else has. Nobody else has had Tom Lopez, Admiral Lopez, who headed up the nuclear research program to develop those detonators, okay, was actually moved from that program at Los Alamos where those were designed, and he was actually moved to the position of, and here's a little drum roll, folks, the position of KBR, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, all right? A subsidiary of, okay, more drum roll, please, of Halliburton Corporation. Dick Cheney, people, all right? So guess what, all right? The guy who was ordered by George W. Bush, Admiral Tom Lopez, to produce a super-duper nuclear detonation pit. Like, you really want to be cool and act like you know what you're talking about, you use the word cool, pit, okay? You want to be cool, you say pit. Instead of detonator, it's pit, all right? P-I-T, all right, pit. You know, that way everybody will know, hey, you've been informed, okay? You've been listening to the Steve Roberts Show, okay? You're really informed, all right? So these nuclear pits are sitting in either on the desktop holding down paperwork for Vladimir Putin, or they are sitting in the hands of mullahs, all right, in the former Persian Empire called Iran, all right? That's where those, yeah. If you've noticed, hardly a word has been spoken about Iran lately, okay, and its nuclear ambitions. Guess what, people? American-made nuclear detonators in Savannah, Georgia. Okay, I hope NSA picks this up. Savannah, Georgia, all right. Savannah, Georgia is responsible, and under Tom Lopez, Admiral Tom Lopez, for producing these, and they are sitting now in the hands of people that are going to pull those out like a set of aces on a deck of playing cards and produce them now. When we want to do something like stop expansion into the Crimea and the Ukraine, oh, we're not going to do anything because he is waving those things. Putin is waving those things around, all right? So, yes, you can blame, and because I will. If you don't, I will, okay, for your listeners. Blame George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld for the state that we are in today, all right? We went into Iraq, and as my reports, I put in my reports, please don't screw this thing up. Please do not screw this up. As we were driving north, I look on my right-hand side, I can see Iran. You know, to the north, I see Iraq. We are in Kuwait, by the way. To the west, we see Saudi Arabia. And then as we move farther north, we see Syria. We see Kurdistan. We see Turkey. All right. And the whole world is watching us. Please don't screw this up, because if we look like a bunch of thick-fingered, bumbling sods, which is exactly what we did in Iraq, okay, with all the nonsense that was, you know, that happened there, then we would not be able to stand up to anybody in the world and back them down, all right? At that time, we were the premier nation, power nation in the world, and nothing looks worse than a great big bear stuck in a mud pit that can't get out, all right? And that's the way we presented ourselves in Iraq. We didn't have enough wherewithal to get in and say, okay, declare victory and get the hell out. All right. We stayed for 10 years, a decade we stayed there. All right. And same way with Afghanistan. We're trying to extract ourselves now, and it's a death by a thousand cuts. That's what we have in our hands. It's like having HIV. All right. No matter what face you put on it, you still got HIV, and that's exactly what we've got with Afghanistan now. So none of these countries are afraid to tackle us now. And if you ever think I don't know what I'm talking about, look at the status of Syria. Okay, Syria. All right. I talk about Syria a couple of times, and every time I do, NSA goes completely bonkers. But Syria. All right. I told your listeners that a big part of the weapons that I discovered, okay, because I discovered a small cache of VX canisters, deep converted P-400 bomb canisters. Well, the larger cache actually went north a week before we got there, okay? And that's where the nuclear detonators went, just to south of Damascus, all right? And so, as a result now, there's been all these efforts to get Russia to go in and gain control of those weapons of mass destruction. And then, of course, our well-trained NBC, Nuclear Biological and Chemical Specialist Force of 15,000, was supposed to go in from Amman, Jordan, which I don't know if they did or not. All right. I seriously doubt it. Okay. Because we tend to screw things up. As long as you have officers in charge, you know, American officers, you're going to have horrific screw-ups, okay, and everything, all right, everything you do. And if you have National Guard, which seems to be pervasive and invasive in everything we do now, you're going to have a disaster like mine, okay, a complete disaster where war crimes are just the norm, where incompetency is a currency, all right?
So, hey, Greg.
Syria, yeah, Steve. Yeah.
Are you telling me that college degree that people get when they're in the military and makes them into officers doesn't make them any smarter than the enlisted people?
Well, maybe back in the good old days, all right, when poor enlisted were usually shanghaied, you know, out of the fields or shanghaied out of towns,
right,
not given a choice. I mean, look at the Russian army. Those poor enlisted, OMG.
Right.
I mean, they got snagged, comrade, and pulled into, you know, the service of the Tsar, and they didn't see home for 20 years, if they did at all. If they weren't annihilated on some battlefield like the Crimea, get it, okay? But the officers, yes, were usually educated in some sort of academy, like the Tsar. You know, people don't understand that, you know, the last Tsar, Russian Tsar, Tsar Nicholas II, actually was in a military academy, educated in a military academy. He knew what he was doing in the military. But yes, in those days, it meant something, all right? Now, with the enlisted, like my group, okay, firstly, all the enlisted all had college degrees, And they had, and in fact, most of the enlisted had more education than the officer corps leading them. And everybody says, oh, no, no, how could that be? Well, just to be a counterintelligence agent, you have to have a higher score to just go to the school than an officer has to go to officer basic course, OBC. All right. So, you know, so things, you know, the officer corps has been banking on street creds that were passed out 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. Okay. Nowadays, most enlisted have as much, if not more, education than the officer corps. All right. And that's a dirty little secret with the officer corps is they don't like it. Okay. They simply do not like the fact that the enlisted that they're telling what to do. Okay. Like in the intelligence corps, know more than what they know. Okay. Look at me. All right. With two postgraduate degrees, a master's degree, an undergraduate degree, about 6 degrees in all. Okay. And I was being ordered to be strapped to a stretcher, shot full of CIA drugs when I reported war crimes by a couple of imbeciles that could barely read and write, but they were officers, see. Now, and I admit readily that there's a mystique with the officer corps. Everybody, you know, everybody's seen Hollywood movies. So, I mean, when you watch a Hollywood movie, you assume that everybody's either a major or a commander or a colonel or a general. Okay. Yeah. Well, guess what?
Well,
yeah,
and
those officer ranks,
especially,
you don't get promoted.
Yeah.
You don't get promoted unless you play ball. Right.
Especially when they walk into a room, Greg, like the mess hall or something, you know, they walk in like they've got a pair that's a pair that weighs 16 pounds, you know?
Pair of what, Steve?
A pair. a pair of cojones. Oh, okay. A pair of cojones.
Okay. Oh, okay, a brass set. Well, you know, the thing is that nowadays officers are taught that this is like a postgraduate course they're in. And they have careers. And to keep your career safe is you have to utilize your resources, and the resources are your enlisted. Okay, so in other words, when you get a bunch of enlisted killed, okay, taking a hill, well, that's not a big deal because what that means is basically you have to write reports if you're an officer about broken equipment. All right, and I saw this in Iraq. Ricardo Sanchez, okay, General Sanchez was in charge, and he was over General Janis Karpinski. I'm sure most of your listeners know who she is, all right? And we had a situation where a patrol was coming back, and this was in one of the, you know, middle Iraq cities. A patrol was coming back at night. And the officer forgot to call with a password, and it was dark, and they were walking back to the unit, and the guys in the unit made a challenge. They received no reply. They sent out a radio message, you know, who are you? We can see you in the night scopes coming. No response, and they assumed, and unfortunately wrongly, that whoever was approaching their position were armed gunmen. Okay. Gee, imagine armed gunmen in Iraq. Okay. And like every night you can see armed gunmen approaching your position. So they opened fire and they killed the commissioned officer, a captain. And the reaction from, they also killed several enlisted too, but the reaction from Ricardo Sanchez, and I know him from Iraq and Abu Ghraib infamy. He was the main general that was in charge of covering up Abu Ghraib. All right. He was the 3-star, if I remember correctly, and over Janis Karpinski, who, by the way, who I know personally and is a friend. I consider her a friend. Ricardo Sanchez, I thought, was going to have a national day of mourning because this captain was killed. All right. Forget the enlisted. They weren't even mentioned, but this courageous young captain was killed. All right. So, and I found that was the standard attitude concerning the officer corps. All right. Now, you know, the military, like I say, has become a, you know, MBA course, all right, for officers. You know, their career is based on what they do and how they convince some colonel somewhere or some major or some general somewhere how wonderful they are and how they should be promoted. And everything like a war operates on a fever pitch of taking credit for what the enlisted do. So, where I'm going with all this is, if you don't think that has a detrimental effect, look at Abu Ghraib, all right? Abu Ghraib. As I told your listeners, I knew all the kids that went to prison at Abu Ghraib. And I didn't see any officers going to prison over Abu Ghraib, all right? In fact, Janice Karpinski, supposedly the highest-ranking flag officer there, who was in charge of all the prisons, she briefly lost her star for about a minute, which was the first time in American history that happened, that a general loses their star, and she was reduced to colonel for about a minute, and then very, very quietly she was re-promoted back to general, all right? So, but you know what the enlisted got, okay, who were following orders?
They got the shaft. Well,
they got pretty much what I got, okay? When I reported war crimes to officers, commissioned officers in my command, this is what I'm having a hard time convincing the court, okay, that very clearly the entire chain of command was corrupted all the way to George Bush on this issue. So what the enlisted got was prison time. The officers got promoted and the enlisted got prison, okay? So that's when people say, well, what about the officers? You know, even my mother, when I got home, my own mother kept saying, you know, and she'd turn her eyes to heaven, okay?
She did.
When she'd tell me this, and she'd say, son, but those are officers. You know, they would never lie about something like this. They would never, you know.
Is that right?
Do what you said they've done, you know. I mean, she just couldn't comprehend it.
Right.
You know, so to make a long story short, no, the officer corps, the American officer corps, is in desperate need of revamping because it is not an MBA program, all right? It's not a postgraduate career move, all right? It's in too much of a serious business to be utilized, like, as a business, okay? So, you know, no. As I saw with my own command, every single level, you know, was so determined not to do what they're supposed to do and obey the law and just be human, okay? Just be humanitarian, all right? They didn't care. They simply did not care. And they, like I say, they were so determined to get this CIA system called Copper Green going and have Copper Green generating funds by the business of rendition that they didn't have any hesitation whatsoever to walk on somebody who reported them and told them, look, you know, you've got war crimes going on here that are going to humiliate the United States of America, embarrass America on every global front, and they didn't bother one little bit. They didn't hesitate one second. You know, I was toast, okay? You know, like I say, you know, the officers got promoted, and I got a stretcher.
Are you all right?
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, I'm just...
Are you getting more messages?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Are you getting more messages or something?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I just got one.
Okay.
Right? When you hear that kind of that click tone, you know, so for your listeners, you know, it's a message that says, this matter is not for private conversation. So I'm assuming this, they're referring to the show as a private conversation, all right?
Right.
So anyway, but to be quite honest, I'm getting kind of used to it, right? So anyway, but that's what is going on. Now, Syria, okay, as I started to say before I went off on my soapbox, Syria, okay, has now become, all right, surprise, the headquarters, Grand Central, for Al-Qaeda. And you know, and your listeners know what I think about Al-Qaeda. Remember what I said? Johnny on the spot, all right? They have now taken up residence in Syria. They have become three times stronger than at any time, you know, since we started our campaign against this mysterious enemy called Al-Qaeda with no nation. Isn't that great? You know, I mean, we were looking for the perfect enemy to justify military budget, okay? And of course, remember what I read to your listeners, the budget that the Department of Defense was asking for, okay? How many billions of dollars that were going to go for, like, just dairy and eggs? What was it, 3 billion, 4 billion, something like that? Just dairy and eggs?
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, besides, we won't get, you know, dairy and eggs are right up there with the new aircraft carriers, okay? We don't have any, you know, we have all these aircraft carriers floating around, and all of a sudden we seem to need more new aircraft carriers, all right? Well, we have, you know, according to what the Department of Defense is saying, it's, oh, yeah, we have to have new aircraft carriers to face down the Chinese in the South China Sea. Oh, Well, we don't have any aircraft carriers that can, you know, that can be on station doing that now. All right. So anyway, but surprise, whenever there is a need for budget justification, guess who shows up? All right. Al-Qaeda, Johnny on the spot. All right. And sure enough, they have done it this time too. You know, I mean, just like clockwork. Okay. If anybody thinks I don't know what I'm talking about, okay, just ask me. I will tell you exactly what is going to happen. I'm never wrong. You know, I really should be president of the United States. Okay. Although I'll never make it.
Oh yeah.
I really should be because, like I say, I'm never wrong. All right.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. So yes, the issue with Al-Qaeda is now is that they're stronger, badder, and supposedly they're coming after us. Oh, my goodness, a place that we can't go, Syria, okay, because of all the screw-ups that we put ourselves into and the position that we put ourselves into. Now they have taken up residence, they've taken residence in Syria, okay? And, let me see, what does this say? I'll just read this. Al-Qaeda threat to the West reported. All right, militants in Syria said to plan terrorist thrust, okay, and they're headed this way, okay. Isn't that wonderful, all right? You know, we just spent trillions of dollars to remove this mysterious enemy, which I said never really existed, this mysterious enemy, okay, that you can tell anybody anything about, and there's no way to refute it, all right? You know, you can say anything you want about Al-Qaeda, and who knows, all right? It's the perfect RAN think tank group, all right? That's where they came from, by the way, is the RAN think tank, all right? Remember for your listeners, remember what I said? The Al-Qaeda was structured, they were cellularized means that they were set up to be self-protective. When one cell falls, okay, to somewhere in the world, they can't give up another cell or they can't give up the entire structure.
Right, correct.
They were transported, okay, they were paid for with unlimited funds, okay, they were armed, they were intelligence, they were logistics, they were communicated, okay, all the state-of-the-art, they were trained, educated, you know, Muhammad Atta. Has anybody ever looked at Muhammad Atta's educational background? Remember, he was the leader of the group that flew planes into the World Trade Center, Muhammad Atta. Of course, we think it was Muhammad Atta because over half of the hijackers showed up a week later and said, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I didn't fly any plane into that World Trade Center. So surprise. That should tell everybody what they need to know right there. But Muhammad Atta had more intelligence and military, U.S. military officer courses than I have, all right? He was more educated and trained by military machine than I have been, all right? And that is rather extensive, what I've been through. Years and years of education training. Muhammad Atta had more than myself, okay? None of them were strangers. None of those people were strangers to several intelligence training areas, extremely sensitive training areas. So, you know, there was no surprise when we find out that the director of the CIA, Mr. Brennan, all right, Mr. John Brennan stamped all their visas personally in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, to let them into the United States. Okay, does that sound like they were the very feared, mysterious terrorist group, you know, that sent everybody scurrying around the world?
Not really.
Hide for cover? No.
Not really.
No, it doesn't, does it? No. Okay. Syria could host Al-Qaeda fighters, says CIA Director John Brennan. Okay. Well, John Brennan, like I say, stamped their visas to let him into this country. And like I say, you know, it's just like the officers and the enlisted. Okay. His second in command said, please do not stamp the visas of these people. I protest. And he was fired on the spot. Okay. This is in Jeddah. I've spoken to him personally, know who he is very well, and indeed. And he was fired on the spot by John Brennan. And John Brennan, of course, as punishment for letting in the 19 hijackers into America, where they could be, of course, you know, they were even tracked by Anthony Schaefer, as I told your listeners, Anthony Schaefer of Fox News. They were tracked, and they proceeded to carry out their mission of the greatest attack on U.S. soil of all history, all right, worse than Pearl Harbor. And, you know, and this was so horrifying that they decided to promote Mr. John Brennan to the head of the CIA. Okay. So that's I think how, you know, you can see why I am a little skeptical, okay, and you can see how I've reached this conclusion about Al-Qaeda and the CIA and Syria and their director, all right? You know, and then I look out here in San Francisco, I look at the fact that Senator Feinstein is upset because the CIA is now spying on her investigators. We're investigating the CIA, okay? And they're horrified to find out that the CIA is out of control, okay? Yes, it's out of control. It's been out of control since the 60s, all right? You know, the Churchill investigators and Churchill group back in the 70s didn't hardly defang that serpent one little bit. It made it stronger. It just made it more devious, all right? So that, you know, so when I go in and I say, hey, I want a fair hearing in a courtroom, you can see how tough it is for me. You know, I think I've mentioned to your listeners, like today, I was reading some of my court case, you know, Steve, and on my court case.
Yes.
Yeah, the U.S. Attorney's Office told a six district court, circuit court judge, Kimberly Mueller, they looked her right in the eye and they said, yes, yeah, we can torture anybody we want. We know it's against the law. We can torture anybody we want. And we can inject them with any drug that we want, and that's the way it is. And Kimberly Mueller, for the record, said, I guess you can, all right, and said, yes, case ruled against for me, all right. They can torture anybody they want. They can screw up any war that they want. They can commit any kind of war crime. And through a bunch of mumbo jumbo and a bunch of nonsense, because no law was cited or anything, they just said, oh yeah, I guess that's the policy, so I guess we can do that. So my case, hence, went on to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, all right, where the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who was responsible for writing the torture memos in the first place, excuse me, the Memorandum of Understanding, all right. I don't want to misquote to your listeners, Steve, the M-O-U, all right. Now, they're going to tell me that, yes, even though that George W. Bush ordered, has confessed on national television, ABC Nightly News, that he ordered the intelligence services to torture, that it was okay, that it's all right, okay, for war crimes to be committed, and that he should not be held accountable, and the government should not be held accountable as a result, okay? That's what has happened to our country, Steve, is that these people yeah. have been allowed to blather a bunch of pointless, useless semantics around, get out of trouble, and when need be, put other people into prison to take their place, okay?
Yeah.
That's why we can't face down, back down the likes of Vladimir Putin in the Crimea. Okay, we won't back him down. Nobody will tackle him. He's walking all over us right now laughing about it, all right? And he'll take even more. We won't slow him down one iota, all right? You think Iran is afraid of us? Afraid to develop nuclear weapons as a result? Oh, hell, we can't even get our own laws straight in our own courtroom, all right, to tell somebody not to do something, right? You think we're going to tell Iran, you know, not to do something? When they've got our nuclear detonators made in America sitting on their desk like Vladimir Putin does? No. Sorry, folks. Things are going to get a whole lot worse, and I don't see them ever getting better because of these people, because of the Bushes, because of Dick Cheney, because of Donald Rumsfeld. Things will not get any better, period. All right? So that's what we have to look forward to. So when a plane disappears, you know, like as I started to say early on in your show, the MH was 370, all right? You know, I'm tending to think that that was an example that was being set. And you pretty much confirmed it when you said that, you know, that when you gave that thing about the issue of the contractor's patent, being itemized and having four people on board and having a very expensive patent all of a sudden, you know, shift ownership, okay? So I think that was all part of it. And I think you're just seeing an example of it right now. You know, I mean, if you don't have a body, you don't have a crime, I think is what they say. I think that's what the U.S. Attorney's Office says in America. If you don't have a body, you don't have a crime. Okay, I think that's what they say. So, and I think that's what America is going to state on this missing airliner. Because we do have Americans on that airliner that went missing. Okay, they'll say that. You don't have a crime. everything might amount to it, but you don't have a crime. It, nobody ever, you know, ever looked at the Lockerbie bombing, okay, and said, Jesus, we have a crime here, all right? And it took years and years of forensic reconstruction to finally turn around and say, yeah, it was blown out of the sky to get, you know, to hush up intelligence information, finally, okay, when the families insisted. As I said last night on my show, there is a, years ago, there was a Swedish, it was a ferry, car ferry, and this was up, you know, in the North Sea there. And it was headed out to sea, and car ferries, especially built for that area, are extremely well built. Okay. They don't have structural failures, period. All right. Like that airliner, you know, they don't have structural failures. The last failure for that type of airliner was like 15 years ago, something like that. They simply don't have airline failures or airframe failures, and they don't have car ferry structural failures in that area. Philippines, maybe, but not, you know, in the Scandinavian countries. Simply they don't. Well, surprise. A car ferry goes down, all right? And it goes down so quickly that it took a large number of people on board. Well, the story didn't ring true for a lot of people, and I think you remember this case, Steve, is they said that somehow that the front ramp, when you take cars on board, that you drive cars on board, and like in Scotland, okay, you know, in my beloved Scotland, you know, they have a lot of, you know, like the Oban ferry and so forth. They have the same type of ferry moving back and forth, and you know out to the you know, Isle of Mull and the Outer Hebrides and the Shetlands and so forth. So, you know, those car ferries do not fail. Well, this one did catastrophically, and they said that the front ramp went down. And of course, the manufacturers and the engineers said, no way that, you know, could that ramp have gone down and that ship went down as quickly as it did. Well, and this is what I'm saying about how governments will lie to people. Well, yes, it did go down because it was carrying illegal NATO munitions, you know, in the lower holds of the ship, all right? It was carrying, you know, like the Lusitania, okay? It was carrying something it should not have been carrying, which was against the law. And yes, those munitions detonated, and it blew the bottom right out of that ship, and it sank it, all right? It sank within minutes, all right? And it was designed not to. And so, of course, the Swedish government turned right around and said, no, sorry, you know, we're not going to have any investigation on the site. And finally, the families, and that's where you see the biggest pressure. And that's where I expect to see the biggest pressure come from on the Malaysian flight. Is the families said, we're not buying it. We're paying for our own private investigators. And then, as in the Swedish case, the ship was located on the bottom. And then, of course, the Swedish government said, well, the bodies are all gone. They're all disintegrated. And there's nobody to recover. You know how the ocean is. And so the, you know, great expense, the families put together a private operation that sent remote submersibles down and actually found all their loved ones laying on the bottom, all right, of the ocean because it was dark and cold, low oxygen content. So the bodies were all intact, and the ship, surprise, had its bottom blown out, all right? So, yes, the Swedish government was caught bald-facedly lying to the public, to their taxpayers, their citizens, lying to the public, all right? And that is one example there. The KAL flight, 007, Lockerbie bombing, these are all examples of government lying to us on these things.
Yes, they are. And how about the one off of Atlantic coast there, just off New York's, New Jersey?
That's where the airliner was, the 747 was headed off to Europe.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was, it had a bunch of French, you know, kids from high school. They were French speakers, and they were going to go to Paris.
Yes.
And that's what the gal who called in, the woman who called in earlier and said, yeah, well, the Malaysian plane could have been shot down. Well, that's what came to mind, by the way, was that flight. And I've spoken to some very, very credible sources on that, and they said, no, there's no way that plane had a spark in its gas tank and blew up. Okay, when it booted bits, you know, it spiraled up in the air with the entire passenger crew alive and everybody, you know, being knocked out and passed out and so forth because of the acceleration and all this other nonsense. No, that plane was shot down because it was an accidental triggering of a surface-to-air missile by a Navy ship, by all accounts, and the Navy ship was immediately sent packing, you know, halfway around the world. See, that's how our government responds to these issues is, oh, this is an embarrassment, so that's, you know, let's classify the whole thing. We'll classify it, right? And then we'll get that ship and the entire crew on the other side of the world, and then the American people will forget about it in about a day, okay, which is basically what happened. And, you know, I don't care. They said they reconstructed the whole plane and they didn't find any evidence, you know, of you know, frames being shattered in the airframe structure or anything like that. I don't buy it, okay? It's just that simple. A federal agency operating on federal funds will damn near do anything and say anything they're told to say, all right? They will not go against the powers that be. And I think on that flight, yes, I think, how many witnesses, what, 56, 60 witnesses? Pretty much like the Pennsylvania plane that went down. You know, all these witnesses standing around watching the thing happen. And, of course, there's all these government experts who say, oh, no. You know, things look differently than what the eyewitnesses say actually happened. Not too long ago, Steve, we had some people in Southern California. In fact, several thousand people saw something. They couldn't tell what it was. This is at sunset. This was, a few years back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And they saw it arcing through the sky. And it landed in the ocean, all right, not too far off the Southern California coast. Well, of course, you know, here come the experts, right? You know, never tell your listeners or ask your listeners never to refer to me as an expert, all right? Because, first of all, I can't get my voice low enough to sound authoritative like that, like the expert sound, all right?
Yeah.
I don't have any $3,000 suits in my closet like these experts have, okay? You know, I don't dye my hair like these experts do. I don't sound like a, you know, half-witted imbecile like most of these experts do. And so, anyway, but all of a sudden, here's these experts stating that it was, what did they say? It was just a satellite or it was just a missile test firing at Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is the premier testing site, you know, in California for Air Force missiles. Okay, and it's always pretty spectacular when they do fire those missiles. It really is. But needless to say, no, it was, you know, what landed in the water there was nothing like what they said it was. Okay, and it turned out to be a missile fired by a Chinese submarine. Okay, and it was basically an ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile. And it arced, you know, around the world, you know, following and tracking. And it hit exactly where it was supposed to hit, all right?
Hey, Greg.
And which was about 2 miles from our international boundary there.
Hey.
The ocean. Yes.
Hey, Greg. I say that submarine was let into the area. I don't say, I don't think it snuck into the area or creeped into the area or materialized into the area. I think it was let into the area.
Well, if it was, yeah, I mean, there's no way some big clanking communist submarine, okay, you know, with all the listening devices, what they call SOSIS, okay, listening devices, would not detect a submarine like that. But the way I understand it, that it fired, you know, it was clear on the other side of the Pacific when it fired this missile. And what they wanted to do was demonstrate just how accurate their ICBM tracking systems, which usually control MIRVs, multiple reentry vehicles, in deployment, could actually place, how closely it could place one of its missiles. And they did. They placed it within 2 miles of our U.S. Boundary, you know, ocean boundary. So that's, a, you know, in terms of nuclear material and attack, Two miles, that's as good as, that's, you know, it's almost like horseshoes, okay? That's as good as a hit. So, you know, it's like hand grenades too. You know, it's just as close. So I think the way I understand it, that's what the Chinese were doing, is sending us a message that all those digital records that Bill Clinton had overrode the NSA security protocols and accords on, to get the Chinese, you know, because they were giving it plenty of donation money. Okay, and he gave them all our digital output from our missile tests. Okay, that's what they did with them, and that's what they put them to use with. Okay, was to demonstrate that they could fire a missile and hit us anytime, anywhere. All right, so I think, you know, normally I blame George Bush. You know, I mean, you know, for everything from, you know, from Haley's comet to, you know, to, you know, my me stubbing my toe, you know, like this morning, I blamed George Bush for stubbing my toe in my garden. But in this case, I will blame Bill Clinton for that. Bill Clinton was responsible for giving the Chinese.
Yes, he was.
All that sensitive material. Okay. You know, of that digital readout material on all our missile launches. So. And that's what that was. And so that's why when I hear the government say anything about anything, I'm automatically suspicious, as you might imagine. All right. So.
Well, first of all, Greg, I believe nothing the government says. And I believe even less what the American media says. So that tells you where my stance is.
Well, like I say, you know, we had this talk right before the show started, Steve. And, you know, most of our folks in America are much more concerned, not about me being strapped to a stretcher and shot full of CIA torture drugs. No, they're not, you know, they're not worried about world class scandals, you know, and politicians, absolutely out of control politicians ripping off. You know, when was the last time we saw a income tax reduction in this country? Have we ever seen it? I don't know of any, okay? But surprise, when all these military bases shut down and all these budgets get trimmed back, is there any reduction at all? 1%, you know, of our taxes? No, okay? So what does that tell you? All right. But in terms of, you know, credibility, okay, our politicians, yes, they're not concerned. They don't care. And when it comes to what the public thinks about Kim Kardashian, all right, Kim Kardashian, very clearly, when I was buying some bottled water so I could have some to drink on your show tonight. Kim Kardashian takes up 3/4 of the reading media, okay, at the store where I was checking out. All right. And so, you know, now I can actually say that I am an expert on Kim Kardashian, okay, and the reality stars, okay. I know what line of clothes Kim Kardashian likes to wear now. I know why Kim Kardashian is upset. All right, she's upset about something. Yeah, something. I know what it is now. Okay, that was on the Inquirer. She's very upset about something. Okay, I know that she last week she had a fight with her boyfriend, somebody named Kanye West. Okay, she had a fight with him over something. Okay, now, you know, now that is much more important. You know, for the media, reality TV stars who can't sing, who can't dance, who can't put a noun and a verb back to back, all right, have no, you know, oh, and also that Bruce Jenner, the former triathlon star now, who is her stepdad, okay, he has had a sex change too, okay.
That's
something I found out tonight.
He has.
Sex change.
Oh,
okay.
Goodness.
And her parents, her mother and Bruce Jenner are getting a divorce, but I guess there's some issue about custody over clothes now. You know, Bruce Jenner wants the wardrobe that, you know, Kim Kardashian's mother. So that is another big issue. Okay. So where is Papa Kardashian, the famous lawyer, when we need him, right? Okay. To sort this all out. But I didn't see any other issues, you know, like political issues, all right? I didn't see anything else. You know, at the checkout stands tonight. So, like I say, I think I missed my calling. I should have been a reality TV star. Okay. All right. When Paris Hilton has thousands of raving, screaming fans greet her in Manila. Okay. And I have never heard Paris Hilton speak English. Okay. I've never heard her say a word. Okay. I guess she has in the past spoken to somebody, but somehow she has become, according to Paris Hilton, more popular than, what was it, the Pope or something like that? Something close to that, all right? So, you know, I think that somehow I missed a calling in life, and I should have been a TV reality star, okay?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. Justin Bieber made $150 million last year. Justin Bieber. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, say, Greg.
I guess I could have been a believer. Okay, get it? Believer.
Yeah.
Bieber.
Okay. Let's say, Greg. Yeah. You know, our second hour is zoomed on by.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, I can probably tell most of you, you know, if you haven't had anybody check in the chat room, okay, they're probably all asleep now or change
well,
the channel. Yeah.
It's seven. So, it's 6 o'clock over there in Scotland and Ireland. But
okay, but yeah,
6 a.m.
Yeah. What time would it be in Scotland now?
Six a.m.
Waking up, aren't they?
It's 6 a.m.
6 a.m. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, it's time for my family members there in Dorney and Picklockery. You know, it's about time for them to get up and put on their kilts, okay? By the way, I had a woman ask me because I went to high tea last weekend, and a woman asked me what I had underneath my kilt, and I learned this response when I left time I was in Dorney, and I said that I wear underwear under my kilt. And the reason why I wear underwear under my kilt is because if I didn't, I would have to have a very long kilt, all right? So that is the response that I got from when I was in Picklockery and Dorney seeing my family members, okay? So the Robert Burns Supper was a smash hit this year for the Robert Burns birthday
okay.
in January.
Right.
So for all those folks that are just waking up, hey, I'm thinking about them, and think freedom, okay? Believe me, the British will get over it. You know, they've had 500 years to get over the fact of Scots autonomy, all right? I'm hearing all these rumors about how the Scots are thinking about voting against freedom. Hey, the Brits will get over it, trust me, all right? They've had lots of practice.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, great. So anyway, hey, I'll let you say goodnight to all your wonderful listeners, okay? And I hope I was entertaining for them. So,
oh, yes.
I always try to be.
You know, yeah, so. Yeah, you normally are. Okay. So I enjoy all your shows. You're just a wealth of information and, present it in a joyful way, you know,
in a fertile context,
yes.
I think is what you're looking for.
That's right.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Great. Great. Well, you know, salons to all your listeners and hopefully you'll have me back, you know, if you don't get too many bad reviews on the chat room. So it was great to be here, Steve, and I think it's mostly getting kind of late back, and where is it? Niles, Michigan?
Niles, Michigan.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, all those driveways must be iced over again. And,
it's been nice, and most of the snow is gone now.
Oh, okay. Well, by the way, we actually had it wasn't quite a snowstorm, but a hailstorm today in California. A tornado too. I'm getting a running review here. A tornado. Okay, we have a little place called Roseville, which was listed by Lady Bird Johnson. Okay, back in the '60s, as the most American town in all of America, Roseville,
yeah.
California. Right?
Okay.
Well, just while we were speaking, a tornado just took out several houses there. Okay.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's too
bad.
Can
you imagine? A tornado in California?
Yeah.
Nothing sacred, you know, I mean, that sounds like some trailer park out in Kansas or somewhere, you know, I mean, that kind of stuff happens
there,
but it doesn't happen in California.
Well, I'll go ahead and let you go for the night then, Greg.
Okay, well, good night to everybody, and I'll go catch the news on these wild tornadoes.
Yeah, get the scoop on that, all right?
Okay, well, good night to everybody, and thanks so much, Steve, for having me. Good night now.
All right, goodbye. All right, everyone, I'm out for the night. This has been Stephen Roberts Live on April Rain's We Roar Radio and People's Internet Radio in Ireland. So, good night, everyone.